Luke 2:41-52. Every year Jesus' parents traveled to Jerusalem for the Feast of Passover. When he was 12 years old, they went up as they always did for the feast. And when it was over and they left for home, the child Jesus stayed behind in Jerusalem. But his parents didn't know it. Thinking he was somewhere in the company of the pilgrims, they journeyed for a whole day and then began looking for him among relatives and neighbors. When they didn't find him, they went back to Jerusalem looking for him. The next day, they found him in the temple, seated among the teachers, listening to them and asking questions. The teachers were all quite taken with him, impressed with the sharpness of his answers. But his parents were not impressed. They were upset and hurt. His mother said, "Young man, why have you done this to us? Your father and I have been half out of our minds looking for you." And he said, "Why were you looking for me? Didn't you know that I have to be here, that I had to be here dealing with the things of my father?" But they had no idea what he was talking about. So he went back to Nazareth with them and lived obediently with them. His mother held these things dearly, deep within herself, and Jesus matured, growing up in both body and spirit, blessed by both God and people. Pastor Blaine?
This morning, I would actually like to begin with a brief slideshow. Pictures of what might be called sacred places, sacred space. Some of these pictures I downloaded off websites, and some of them are from the viewfinder of Rachel Holderman's camera taken on her cross-cultural trip to the Middle East. It could be asked, who built them and why? What was the motivation for their construction? Was it a creative genius that needed to find expression? Was it a large ego at work, building something bigger and better than one's neighbors had? Could it be that there was an attention to beauty at play, beauty meant to arrest one's eyes heavenward in worship, a place to go to get away from the ordinary, mundane, workaday world? What is the motivation for a building project like these? How long did it take? Many of those who started work on these were not around anymore at the completion. The designer could be around for the groundbreaking and die off long before the grand opening. One of this morning's scripture lessons will go on to say that the temple construction had been going on for 46 years. Those at the beginning would never see the completion. Was cost ever a concern? Who had the bucks to fund it? Where did the money come from? And we could also ask further, would I want to go to any of these places to visit, to be there? And why? Would we go as a tourist? Would it be a destination site? And how much effort am I willing to put forth to get to one of these places? Are any of these places bucket list worthy? Would we go to a place like these to worship? Could we? Could we enter into worship in one of these places? This Mennonite guy once visited New York City's St. Patrick's Cathedral with a Catholic friend, a sacred place where both tourists and worshipers were present. And as we took our seats, I was so taken by the architectural splendor and the grandeur of the vaulted ceilings that it took me several minutes to find out where the priest actually was, who was delivering his homily from a rather secluded spot off to the side. And was some of that the point, maybe, that worship is actually more than words? Would I care to go to a splendiferous place like one of these? Well, apparently Mary and Joseph did. They wanted to go. They wanted to go to the temple. They traveled from Nazareth to Jerusalem every year, and they took Jesus along every year. But this year, he was 12. Now, Nazareth to Jerusalem is about 64 miles by air. Not that far if you own yourself a helicopter or a jet. It's about 90 miles by car, an hour and a half if you keep it at around 60. You can probably do it without a rest stop if you try. That's not so bad. If you were walking, however, it takes about 5 days, which is much more of a commitment. And if you are Mary and Joseph toting Jesus along, who owned neither car nor helicopter nor horse, if you went to Jerusalem, if you wanted to go there for worship, you kind of had to want to get there. And it wasn't so much that cars and copters had yet to be invented. When you are peasants, not that many years removed from refugee status, you could not have afforded them anyway. So they walked for 5 days to get there, 5 more days back home. And how far exactly can a 12-year-old boy walk? That is, walk without complaining. Never mind the overnighting along the way. And were there porta-potties to be found? Or did 12-year-old Jesus catch the excitement of the crowd? For Mary and Joseph and Jesus, the temple was a destination, and they would have kind of wanted to get there. This temple destination was being refurbished by King Herod. Yep, the same King Herod whose death wish had all sent them scurrying to Egypt in the first place. That King Herod, who was sometimes referred to as Herod the Great. Great because of his fondness for grand building projects. Herod was refurbishing the temple. Josephus, a historian during that era, said Herod was interested in perpetuating his name through building projects, and that his construction projects were paid for by heavy taxes, and that his masterpiece project was the Temple of Jerusalem. And we could go back to the earlier question of why sacred places get built. Was it motivated by a sincere faith or by a very large ego? Why do beautiful sacred spaces get built? The heart, the motives of anyone are hard to accurately measure. Whatever the case, Mary and Joseph went 5 days into Jerusalem to celebrate Passover festival, and Jesus went with them. He went with them to this grand temple. He was 12 at the time. Lately, we have been introduced to some of the newer borns being born among us, like Josiah and John and Levi. And we are also aware that there are some babies who are still on their way. And do you suppose their moms and dads look into these newborn faces and wonder, I wonder what they'll grow up to be? Do you see them putting their hands on mom's tummy and wondering, who is it exactly that is coming? Around here on any given Sunday, to the delight of many and the chagrin of a couple, probably, a trail of littler ones come springing forward, bringing their nickels for their neighbors, coming forward with guidance. They bring their moods, their uninhibited styles, and their coins. And what are their parents thinking? Is a trait of giving beginning to develop among them? Is generosity being formed in their young minds? Do parents like Mary in this morning's lessons put hand to chin and ponder, what will this child grow up to be? Where will they go? And when they go, can I let them go? A couple of Sundays back, Abigail, who is 11, came up to me and said, Pastor Blaine, in your sermon, you used alliteration. That's fantastic. For she, no doubt, is bringing what she learns in her schooling to church and from her church back to her home. A young mind is being formed. There is this one line in Luke about Jesus that comes right after their annual visit to the gorgeous temple. It says that Jesus increased in both wisdom and in years, and that the results were favorable, which does sound like a biblical understatement if there ever was one. years and wisdom, and it had Mary especially pondering, what will this child become? And is that what parents do? Do uncles and aunts and friends and grandparents think all these things at the high school and college graduations that they have been attending? Wonder, where will this child go next? When studies show that the human brain is not fully developed until the early to mid-20s, that these graduations we have been witnessing and celebrating are not so much of an ending, but a final step towards maturity that is coming. You ever wonder why Jesus didn't get started into his holy career until he was 30? I mean, were his 20s wasted? Or were his 20s still a time of wisdoming and staturing? Was Jesus not quite ready until he was 30? There's that famous proverb from the book of Proverbs. We mentioned it last week. Last week we mentioned it in the negative sense, in the way that like father, like son, Archelaus acted very much like his father, Herod. The proverb is, train a child in the right way, and when old, they will not stray from it. And I think from our distance, it may be a little bit difficult for us to imagine Jesus growing up, to imagine a time when Jesus still had some things to learn. But there's a certain patience in this morning's reading from Luke that there did come a day that one year after making all of these round trips to the temple, that there did come a day when Jesus stayed behind after his parents had taken off and he was found back at the temple queuing and A-ing with the teachers, which suggests that Jesus was not at the grand temple as a gawking tourist, but that Jesus' career was beginning to form and that the temple was part of it. And Mary kept thinking, one day, what will this boy be?
And then in John 2, there are adults in the temple. An adult Jesus as well, who knew his mission and his calling clearly and well. After this, he went down to Capernaum with his mother and brothers and his disciples. There they stayed for a few days. When it was almost time for the Jewish Passover, Jesus went up to Jerusalem. In the temple courts, he found men selling cattle, sheep, and doves, and others sitting at tables exchanging money. So he made a whip out of cords and drove all from the temple area, both sheep and cattle. He scattered the coins of the money changers and overturned their tables. To those who sold doves, he said, "Get these out of here. How dare you turn my father's house into a marketplace?" His disciples remembered that it is written, "Zeal for your house will consume me." Then the Jews demanded of him, "What miraculous sign can you show us to prove your authority to do all this?" Jesus answered them, "Destroy this temple, and I will raise it again in 3 days." The Jews replied, "It's taken 46 years to build this temple, and you're going to raise it in 3 days? But the temple he had spoken of was his body. After he was raised from the dead, his disciples recalled what he had said. Then they believed the scriptures and the words that Jesus had spoken. Now, while he was in Jerusalem at the Passover feast, many people saw the miraculous signs he was doing and believed in his name. But Jesus would not entrust himself to them, for he knew all men. He did not need man's testimony about man, for he knew what was in a man."
This account that we just heard is really quite famous. Jesus at the temple on quite a different day. We just heard it read from John's gospel, but it also appears in the other three. This famous temple event reveals a certain side to Jesus that is, shall we say, pretty far removed from the gentle blessing of the children, pretty far removed from the calm seaside conversation of fisher folks. This time, Jesus appears to be getting after it, flipping tables over, making quite a spectacle of himself, as my dad would say, a Jesus spectacle. A side to Jesus we menos don't always like to claim, not the humble and meek Jesus we prefer our theology. If we are the close to the Bible study types, we will discover that gospel writers Matthew, Luke, and Mark put this famous temple incident near the end of Jesus' career, after Jesus had dealt with the politics and the prejudices and the tensions and all of the legal hassles that had been dogging him for a couple of years. Jesus had been busy, 3 whole years of busy, going places and walking and healing and teaching and convincing and visioning and praying and visiting and confronting and exorcising and making friends and followers of men and women along the way and going to weddings and saying hard things to receptive ears and saying hard things to those whose jaws were set in determined opposition, dealing with accusations, dealing with betrayal. And so maybe as Bible studiers, we can sympathize with Jesus a bit when he gets to the table flipping towards the end of things. I heard of a man named Scott who read through the Gospels for the very first time as an adult. And he came away seeing how frustrated Jesus was much of the time. So maybe Jesus clearing the deck in the temple that day was a little frustrating, impatient, had had enough. What would it be, after all, to cause Jesus to act the way he did? Upsetting tables and pouring coins on the floor, kicking cattle and sheep out through the gates in this very impressive holy place to boot. Well, what we just heard read for us this morning was from John. And please take notice in John's gospel, this famous incident of Jesus clearing the deck is placed at the beginning of Jesus' career. Jesus is about to get things started. Some of what we will be doing this summer is simply tracking some of the places where Jesus went, a Jesus geography, if you will. And I suspect it's no small thing that although Jesus was raised as a boy going to the temple, he did not spend all that much of his adult life there, not much at all. He turned the tables on the temple and went other places outside of it. And what might that mean for us as churchgoers? Where might our other places be? Let me ask something. Where does the activity of God take place? Is it here? Is it here in the building on Sundays and only on Sundays? Where does the activity of God happen? Does God need a location? A building, an altar, a railing, a wall, a tent, a confessional booth, a retreat center, a prayer room, a communion table, set correctly, done correctly, all the correct words being said. Is that when God shows up? Does God need a specific location to get busy? In this scripture lesson, at the beginning of his 3-year ministry, Jesus began to talk about the temple of his body. Which is a big switch in thinking and in location. Standing inside a huge ornate stone edifice, 46 years in the making and counting, a place of both beauty and of historical significance and confidence, standing in a place like that and speaking of his body as the temple, that's a big switch. That's a big switch in language and in location. A few decades later, Paul says something very similar to what Jesus had said. Paul himself is in a cosmopolitan city, the city of Corinth, a city that had plenty of its own ornate sacred worship places. Paul standing in sight of them saying, "Do you not know that you are God's temple and that God's Spirit dwells in you?" Which is a big switch in language and in location. A big switch in geography. That our own bodies are also a location, a holy location. On many Sunday afternoons during the summer, there will be a professional golf match to watch on television Sunday afternoons. I know, how boring does it get? Right up there with watching televised bowling or a live poker match? Hang on to your seats. And I don't know how they do it, but television has developed a new kind of tracer technology. For a golf ball is a very small object, and it can be hit and travel very far, further than the eye can see, up to 350 yards or more. And so how do you televise a very small white ball traveling a long distance without people losing sight of it who are watching? Well, with this new tracer technology, you can follow the flight of the ball by following the blue trail as it traces the flight of the ball going down the fairway, or into the woods, or into the pond. And I don't know, what if tracer technology could be used for us as human bodies? Trace our steps for a week after we leave this place? Not to be creepy, but if God's temple takes up residence in humans, then God's temples have become mobile, moving about. This temple and other sacred places. I'm not sure how you feel about visiting grand cathedrals. I have visited a few. I've visited St. Patrick's in New York, St. Paul's in London, impressive places that do inspire a sense of awe. I've heard the organ play at St. John the Divine in New York, and the sound is quite an impressive display of power for the ear. Impressive sights while worship sounds vibrate through your whole body. You don't easily forget those moments. Temples and other sacred places, not sure how they might rank on your bucket lists. If you will go as a tourist or if you will go as a worshiper. There was the day when Jesus was leaving the temple and his disciples began to ooh and ah about seeing it. And Jesus told them that the day was coming soon when not one stone of it would be left on top of another one, that it would be flattened to the ground. His prediction came true, of course, because, well, for one thing, Jesus is Jesus. Less than 40 years later, it was flattened to the ground, completely destroyed, splendor and awe. But I don't think the smoking embers of the temple worried Jesus all that much, for it was not the only place where the activity of God would take place. God, in a mysterious and most glorious way, had begun to take up residence in human bodies, and those bodies had followed Jesus out of the temple.